This is Joe Emrahi from Baseball Perspectives. Show some want. Listen to the Nats GM shift.
Welcome, baseball fans, to episode 17 of the Nats GM Show, the only podcast from the Nats GM Radio Network. I am your host, Ryan Sullivan, editor-in-chief of NatsGM.com. My special guest this week is Seth Bernstein. Seth is the former play-by-play announcer for the Kituat Cattleers of the Cape Cod League and is the former assistant director of broadcasting and media relations for the Wilmington Blue Rocks, the high-A affiliate of the Kansas City Royals. A longtime friend of mine, I am excited to talk some baseball with him today. Seth, welcome to the Nats GM Show.
Thanks for having me on, Ryan. Appreciate it.
Yeah, Seth and I have had a friendship for a long time, so I'm very excited to get him on the show today and talk a little baseball. So, like I said in the intro, I kind of became acquainted with Seth when he started working for the Kituat Cattleers a few summers ago, and I would listen to their broadcasts online. Seth, what is that working environment like, being in the Cape, and kind of what were your day-to-day responsibilities besides just doing play-by-play?
Well, in the Cape, it's a very relaxed environment. Unlike at professional baseball, Cape Cod League is very focused on those 3 hours at night that are the game. You're really free all day, and you can prepare as much or as little as you want, and show up about 2 hours before the game, do your broadcast, go home, and do whatever you want after the game. I was a very prepared type of broadcaster there, so I spent hours each night going through my notes and preparing different media guides or different little tidbits about players on each and every team. And every day I also checked to make sure my personal rosters and notes were up to date because there's constant player movement there. But if you didn't want to do that type of preparation, it wasn't going to come back and bite you the way it does in professional baseball. In the Cape, it's a very fun, relaxed, family-oriented, laid-back atmosphere. And my 3 years with the Cattleers, I would say, are the three best years of my life.
Yeah, I mean, there's, like they say, you know, once you get sand in your shoes, you'll never leave the Cape. So it's a truly wonderful experience up there. How did you get a job working for a team there?
I decided that I wanted to work in the Cape, so I sent emails to all of the Cape League teams, and I spoke with the ones that responded back, and basically I ended up in Kituat. It's a little bit more of a deep story than that. In fact, there were a couple of guys at the student radio station at Northwestern who had broadcasted for the Cattleers a couple of years in the past, and when I was a freshman, I saw them come back from the Cape League, and they were talking about how great it was. So I decided, you know what, I'm going to try and do that myself. So later on in my freshman year, I applied to a bunch of Cape League teams. I heard back from one. It was the Brewster Whitecaps, and I was a finalist for their play-by-play position there, and I ended up finishing third for two spots, so I was one spot shy of becoming a play-by-play broadcaster for the Brewster Whitecaps. So my story could have been very different had that worked out after my freshman year. But after my sophomore year, I decided I was going to try and put more of a full-court pressure on Kituat because I really wanted to end up in the same place that the guys at Northwestern did. And fortunately, that did work out. I was actually in the press box at Penn State's basketball arena when I got a call from the president of the Cattleers, Paul Logan, telling me that I had the job. So a couple of interesting stories there about my Cape League past.
Yeah, what was the, or who was the best player you saw play in your 3 years on the Cape?
That's a very general question. I have to sit and think about that one. But there were certainly quite a few good ones, whether it was Marcus Stroman, who's with the Blue Jays now. He was one of the first pitchers I saw there. Kyle Zimmer, the Royals, he's just one level away from making the big leagues at that point. there were so many good players there who may not necessarily be superstars at the pro level, but they were excellent on the Cape. One of my favorite players was Tony Kemp, who was the SEC Player of the Year his junior year at Vanderbilt. Just a spark plug, hit 361 at the top of the Kettleers lineup that year. He's currently tearing up Double A right now for the Astros. And he's only 5'6", and I think he's going to be a regular, everyday major league player with a very bright future. Just the nicest kid you'll ever meet. There could be so many different answers, because I did see so many different first and second and third and beyond round draft picks while I was there.
Yeah, but like you said, Tony Kemp, he might win the Player of the Year in the Astros organization. He absolutely blew it up this year, so that's a good name. Another question I want to ask, and I kind of want to transition off the Cape a little bit, is I have a lot of young listeners and a lot of people that will email me and just kind of ask how to get a job in baseball. And, you know, I typically respond to them that I'm probably the worst person to ask because I don't want a job in baseball. But but obviously with yourself working in baseball, both, you know, in the Cape and then now you spent some time with the Blue Rocks, just how do you, you know, how do you go about getting a job there? Or what advice would you give?
I'd say get as much experience in high school and college and whenever you can in the field that you would like to move in, and then start networking with people, email, call, do whatever it takes to get in contact so you can establish some relationships within the game. And there are several different websites, depending on what you want to do, that you would sign up for to get job listings. But if you establish those relationships in the game, you might hear about stuff before it's posted, or you might get some non-listed job potential, job opportunities rather, as well. So it really depends on what you want to do. If you want to be a broadcaster, do a lot of play-by-play growing up, and especially in college, meet a bunch of broadcasters. What I did was I talked to pretty much every broadcaster at Northwestern that was in to broadcast a game for Big Ten Network or ESPN or CBS. No matter who it was, I went and introduced myself, got contact information, established a relationship there so that I could count on them to give me advice. They'd critique my work. They would even put in a reference for me. Several big names did that for me, and I'm very appreciative of that. And then STAA, Sportscasters Talent Agency of America, is a place where a lot of those jobs get listed, for broadcasting at least. And then Minor League Baseball has its own online job board as well. And a lot of people go down to the winter meetings looking for work. I've chosen not to do that because it's just so chaotic and difficult to get the one-on-one time that you need with people.
Certainly,
some people love the winter meetings. I'm not a big proponent of them. I'd love to go one day. I also don't want to spend $1,000 for something that may or may not lead to a job. So one day, if I'm employed by an organization or a network that wants to send me down there, I'd absolutely love to go. I just don't want to pay that kind of money for something that may or may not benefit me.
Yeah, and it sounds like you've got to have the right kind of personality, too, for that, you know, complete meat market that's going on there and mm-hmm. all the chaos that's going on as well. Another topic I wanted to ask you about was you were fortunate enough to be there. Wilmington hosted the High A All-Star Game this year with just a tremendous amount of prospects. What was that experience like, kind of working in the middle of, you know, that whole extravaganza, and which players particularly stood out to you?
Well, that was one of the most exciting but also stressful weeks of my life. It was such a cool experience. I'd say, aside from winning the Cape League Championship and calling that final out, that was probably the coolest thing I've ever done in sports and away from sports, just because of how intense it was, how many big names came by, and what a true event and spectacle it was. Getting to meet George Brett, Mike Sweeney, and Johnny Damon was really cool. George Brett's the first Hall of Famer I've ever met or spoken any words with, so that's a first I'll never forget. And of course, the All-Star Game, like I said, it's just such a spectacle. And all the pomp and circumstance with fireworks and a flyover and big names from two different advanced A leagues. It was really, really fun. In terms of big names there, the obvious one, Carlos Correa. He was injured a couple of weeks after the game, missed a lot of time in the second half of the year, but I think by all accounts he's still considered one of the top two or three prospects in all of baseball. And boy, is he an impressive figure. He just looks the part of Major League Baseball slugger and all-around superstar. He's also a really nice kid, great with the intangibles, takes time for everybody, very friendly and very polite, very gentlemanly. All the good things you hear about Carlos Correa, very true. I was also a big fan of Jesse Winker, prospect for the Cincinnati Reds organization. He's got a bright future as a left-handed power-hitting outfielder.
He can flat out
also
hit. He can flat hit.
A really nice guy.
Oh, good. That's good to hear. So, I guess this is a little bit more of a broader picture question, but now that you've spent some time in the minor leagues and worked there, what did you learn from this season? Kind of what do you take away from this, both good and bad, that you can maybe share with, like I say, maybe some of the people in my audience that are a little younger thinking about, hey, do I want to get into the minor leagues and working in baseball?
If you want to work in minor league baseball, you better make sure you love baseball. That's my number one advice in that regard, just simply because it's a lot of hours, it's a lot of work, and it's very exhausting. So you better love baseball if you want to do it, because baseball will pretty much consume your life for the time during the season, which is a good 7 months while you're there. So, you know, you better love the game, because once the season gets rolling during those homestands, you're going to be working 14 hours a day every week, 7 days a week, I should say. And if you're a broadcaster, at least, you're not going to get the break when the team's on the road like everybody else in the front office does. Most of the front office gets to move from your 14-hour day back to a 9-to-5 day. But if you're a broadcaster, you're going to be going on the road, taking some of those overnight 7-to-10-hour bus rides, really exciting, getting in at 4 or 5 in the morning, and then having to work and do your broadcasts with very few days off. It's a 140-game season. I think there's only 10 off days in most minor leagues, so it's a grueling schedule. It's really exhausting, and it's going to test the resolve of even the biggest baseball fans.
And I'm guessing you didn't exactly line your pockets with a lot of dollars either at the same time. So
no, that's another thing. Especially early on in your career, you're not going to make a lot of money. You have to make sacrifices in addition to your pocketbook, time away from your family, time away from your close friends, from your hometown. You can't exactly pop away and just disappear mid-season when there's a broadcast or a game to run each and every day.
Yeah, it's very demanding. We forget it, you know, too often we forget about the sacrifices and how hard the broadcasters work. We see the guys on the field and we just, you know, kind of take the audio and the broadcast for granted. So it's nice to hear that, or I don't know if nice is the right word, but it's interesting to hear exactly how hard you guys work as well. So, once again, I want to try to talk a couple of players with you, if I could. First player I want to talk about is Brandon Finnegan, first-round pick for the Royals this year, is currently tearing it up, you know, in the playoffs. I think he spent a fair amount of time with you guys this season. Just kind of your, what'd you see from Brandon, either on the field, off the field, kind of in general?
Absolute bulldog. That's the best way to describe Brandon Finnegan. I was first exposed to him actually last year in the Cape League. He
That's right. I forgot about that. Yeah, absolutely.
Two appearances for the Falmouth Commodores. I never saw him pitch, but I heard people raving about him last year. So I was at the very least quite aware of who he was in the summer of 2013. And then, of course, he went off to Team USA, which is where he described to me his biggest development came. He said that he was able to really crank his fastball up into 98, 99 miles an hour pretty much every time he took the mound, every pitch that he threw a fastball in the Cape, or rather in the collegiate national team. And that was where some of his greatest success prior to this year came. And he said when he went back to TCU, he realized he didn't have to throw that hard every day or every at bat either. So he went back and kind of ramped it back down to 93 to 95 for the most part. And he said, whenever I need to go back and get that pitch at 98, 99, he can. So when I first saw him pitch in Wilmington, he made five starts in, I want to say, late June, throughout July and early August.
Yeah, pretty soon after the draft, sure.
I saw this guy pitch, and I said to myself, this stuff looks like it could play in the big leagues right now, because he had such command of his slider, a really effective changeup, and an outstanding fastball, obviously. And he just kept mowing guys down, one after another after another. And each start he got better and better. He didn't give up a hit, I don't think, until his second or third start with the Blue Rocks. Obviously, his innings were limited to two and then three and four, because he pitched a full season at TCU. The Royals were being very cautious with his innings limit, because I think they knew as well as anyone that in an ideal scenario, he would be playing a role on their playoff squad this year. And boy, has that caution paid off, because he's doing the exact same thing in the Major League Baseball postseason that he did for us and that he did at TCU, which is mow down hitters and look really good doing it.
Yeah, I saw his...
Also just...
Go ahead.
Also just a great guy, too. He doesn't get fazed. The pressure doesn't bother him. And he describes himself as a bulldog. That's why I use the word. That comes pretty much straight from the horse's mouth. And you see why. He's one of the most confident players, a good confidence, that I've ever seen.
Yeah, I mean, I saw his first start this season for TCU, and I was just like, man, this guy is a player. And like you said, the changeup is really good, and we haven't seen that pitch much. Obviously, he's coming out of the bullpen, and he hadn't needed it, frankly. But I think he can be a starter long-term with that changeup and kind of with the mentality that he has, like you say.
He certainly looked good enough to be a starter in his five starts with Wilmington, and I think KC certainly intends to have him as a starter long-term. Just seems like this year, in this postseason, this was the quickest way to get him to the big leagues and, you know, have him affect the team on their road to the World Series. And he's played such a big role, whether it was in the wild card game or coming in relief in the ALCS or the ALDS even. I mean, he's been such an important part of that team. And he's pitched so well at the big league level. I think you at the very least have to consider the fact that he could break camp in the spring as a starting pitcher, just simply because of how good he is and his work ethic.
Yeah, I'm going to be very interested to see where he ends up in 2015 and down the road, because, like you say, he's built to be a starter, but sometimes when those guys have so much success in the bullpen, they tend to stay there. So, but quite a nice return for, I think, the 17th pick in the first round, you know, this June.
Absolutely.
So. Another player that I wanted to talk to you about on the Blue Rocks this year, and it just amazes me that this guy is playing high-A baseball, Raul Mondesi Jr. I mean, I grew up with his father playing right field for the Dodgers and for some other teams. It's amazing to be watching his son play now. But kind of your thoughts on Raul, once again, either on the field or off the field?
Well, actually, one quick correction. He's actually not Raul Mondesi Jr. It's Raul Adalberto Mondesi. His brother is Raul Mondesi Jr.
Oh, is that?
So there are actually two Raul Mondesis that are the sons of Raul Mondesi.
Okay, I didn't know that there was a second one. Okay, I'm glad you made that correction, because I just wasn't going to try to do Adalbert. I was not going to get that one right, but that's a good correction. Thank you.
But Raul Mondesi Jr. doesn't have the skills that Raul Adalberto Mondesi. Raul Mondesi Jr.'s minor league career seems to have stalled a bit, while the Blue Rocks Raul Mondesi, boy, is he a special talent. He's also very raw. He's also several years away from the big leagues. But as a 19-year-old in advanced day baseball, not too bad. He's a very mature player for his age. He's a very hard worker, very humble guy for someone whose father was a Major League Baseball star for several years. But, again, he's raw, and he's got a couple of years still, I would say, that he needs to work on his offense. His defense is so good already. His defense is Major League quality at this point in time. He makes so many plays that have you go, I can't believe he just did that. his defense is star quality right now. The bat is where he really needs to catch up. And the bat is going to be a potentially special bat as well. It's just not there yet. As a 19-year-old, and he started the year at 18 years old in high A, obviously he's facing much more advanced competition, pitchers that know how to pitch a little bit better than anything he'd seen before. So he struggled a lot. He also dealt with some injuries this year, which kind of set back some of his development time. A lot of swing and miss in his game at the moment, but he's got the potential to develop good pop to go along with his speed. He could be a shortstop that hits 15 home runs a year, maybe a little bit more, and also steals 30, 40 bases a year as long as he doesn't bulk up too much. He's obviously going to put on some more weight, get a little bit stronger because he's pretty skinny at this point, but there's always a fine line between bulking up too much and bulking up the right amount to keep your speed and add some pop.
Certainly.
So he's a really impressive young ball player.
Yeah, he was one of my favorites to watch this summer. Just like you said, the collection of tools that he's got and the fact that you realize he's 3, 4, 5 years younger than some of the players both on his own team and that he's playing against, and that and the fact that his father, you know, I used to try to trade for his baseball card. It's just pretty amazing to see him playing baseball now. So one final question. After a little bit of time with the Blue Rocks, is it fair to say that you're now a Royals fan rather than a Cubs fan?
No.
Fair enough. But
I'd like the Royals to win the World Series here in the playoffs.
And that's exactly the next question. Kind of your thoughts on the World Series.
I'm rooting for the Royals in the postseason. I'd like them to win the World Series. I will always root for players that I know personally, because baseball is obviously a very personal game, and if you know someone and like them, you want them to do well. But I grew up a Chicago Cubs fan. I live in Chicago, and I fully intend to stay living in Chicago. So I'll always be a Cubs fan first.
Yeah, if anybody ever wonders who my Cubs source is on all things about them, it's definitely Seth. He's a lifelong Cub fan, and one more question. How many wins do the Cubs get next year?
82.
Okay. Winning
record. I'm going to go 2 games above 500.
Okay. I think they would take that. I'm very fascinated.
Everybody would take it.
I'm fascinated to see what they're going to do this offseason. Just cannot wait to see what the blueprint is. So,
let me qualify this. My win prediction will change depending on what they do this offseason. But right now I'm sitting at slightly above 500, maybe in the wild card race until early September.
Okay. And then 2016 is the year for them? Okay. I think they would take that.
I'd say so. But I wouldn't put it past a 2015 breakout either, especially if Chris Bryant continues his ridiculous ascent to the big leagues and produces as much as he has at every minor league stop. I don't think he's going to be in the major leagues until late April, just so they get the service time squared away.
Certainly, sure.
If Javier Baez figures out how to maybe strike out a little bit less and make a little more contact, it's going to happen. The only question is how much is it going to happen?
Yeah, he's
special. If he figures things out, good things are going to happen as well. And I'm supremely confident that Jorge Soler is going to be a major league star for quite a number of years. And that's not even bringing up Anthony Rizzo, who's already a bona fide all-star and one of the best players in the National League.
Yeah, and Castro had a bounce-back year. And I don't think everybody realized it as well. I think he had a solid year, and he's a real nice piece as well.
Sometimes people take him for granted.
He's 24.
Three-time All-Star at 24 years old, which is ridiculously good. And there are not a lot of shortstops at the major league level that can say that's the case. And he's a hard worker, made some big progress this year at the plate, and his numbers would be most likely even better if an ankle injury, I think that's what it was, that didn't end his season a month early.
Yeah, that's a great point. All right, one last question while I've got you on the horn. Give me one prediction of what the Cubs do this offseason.
They're going to, if you ask me, sign one of the big three starting pitchers. Right now I'm leaning John Lester. I'd probably put James Shields second and Max Scherzer a distant third. But I feel like this is the year they're going to go out there and sign one of the big ones.
Okay, that makes sense. We've been talking a little bit in this area about a Jordan Zimmermann to the Cubs for one of your many middle infield prospects or a center fielder. So, just a thought.
Interesting. I hadn't heard anything in that realm. Obviously, he's a free agent, Zimmermann, that is, next year. You almost wonder if the Cubs, if they are interested in him, and how can you not be, would rather just take a shot at the free agent market a year from now. But if the Nationals are looking to give him up, I guess you never know.
Yeah, I mean, I think he would be one of the few teams where that trade could happen because they've got enough pieces. I mean, if they said, hey, Arizmendi or Russell or one of the, you know, name one of the names, you know, it's difficult not to say yes. So, like I said, it'll be very – I'm very interested to see what Theo does this offseason. I can't wait.
I'd say for me – there are a couple of untouchables. Chris Bryant is certainly untouchable under all circumstances, I
sure.
would think. For me, I don't know if for Theo and Jed and the Cubs he is, but I would keep Addison Russell untouchable as well. And then obviously Rizzo and Castro.
Yeah.
Still plenty to work with in terms of a trade.
Oh, there's still
but
eight names there.
I think those are the guys I would prioritize.
Yeah, I think that's probably correct. Which still leaves Baez, Arizmendi, you know, and a half dozen, Almora, and a half dozen other names, Soler. So, should be a fun time. Vogelbach, just so many names, so many players. So, well, Seth, thank you so much. I really appreciate the time this afternoon. I don't want to keep you too long, but I do want to give you a spot here to plug your work, where they can find you on Twitter, where they can find you, you know, kind of going forward and everything like that.
Well, give me a follow on Twitter. At SethBernstein67. My website is SethBernstein67.com, so both of those pretty easy to remember. I love interacting with people, so give me a follow, send me a tweet, and I look forward to hearing from you guys soon.
Yeah, well, Seth, once again, thank you so much. It's wonderful to talk to you, and I hope to see you soon. It's been a long time, and hope to see you around the park.
Thanks so much, Ryan. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much. And that was my conversation with up-and-coming broadcaster Seth Bernstein. Before I finish episode 17, I want to remind everyone that the Nats GM Show is now available on iTunes. So I encourage everyone to please rate and review the show. Also, the podcast is seeking a sponsor or sponsors. So if you or someone you know has any interest in sponsoring the show, please check out natsgm.com for details. Thank you for listening this week. Bye for now.